You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to Viv Govender from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, also from the City of Gold. And I have a confession to make, gentlemen. I'm not the sunniest of people, but I got actually rather depressed, stroke distressed, a couple of days ago. I think it was a couple of days ago. Maybe it was just yesterday. I don't know. But when I heard Donald Trump reacting to President Vladimir Zelensky's pronouncement, rather, that Trump was in a disinformation bubble, which was prompted more or less by Russia, and said he was a dictator and he shouldn't have started the war. He's been there for 3 years and he could have stopped it, etc. And I suddenly thought, no, this is really bad that this man has been elected. And then I saw a Time magazine-style mock-up of him with a crown on his head because he's the king of New York, because he'd stopped the surcharge on cars going into the city and that sort of thing, which was a Biden-era initiative, of course. And I got very, very depressed about it. David, you're a US-centric person. Should I have been depressed?
About Trump?
Well, about saying that...
Absolutely. This is absolutely insane. And when I say insane, I mean that he can turn around now and accuse Zelensky of being responsible for the war. I don't know what ground he's... I don't know where this ground comes. And, you know, to make these kind of accusations, we know that he admires Putin. But I don't know where this leading is. Is forgiveness? Are sanctions going to be lifted? Is it? Are they now going to get buddy buddy again and go down to the Black Sea or wherever they do holiday together and drink vodka? Well, he doesn't drink, Trump, so I don't know. But I mean, it's quite staggering. I mean, Europe is upset by it. I know Viv's going to come in, but for the first time, I'm sure that people are now taking a step back, those who voted and supported him, and saying, oi, you know, we didn't quite see all of this happening. I think everybody is absolutely stunned by his proclamations, and there's not a day that goes by that something doesn't come out of his lips or mouth that doesn't confuse and confuse the market. But I mean, this latest episode is just something else.
It really is. And Viv, there was a commentator on television on an American channel, which is very anti-Trump. And this person said, maybe Putin has something on him, because everything that was said, this is what he speculated. They had an hour and a half talk on the telephone. Everything that Putin said to Trump, Trump spouted out. In other words, you know, there's going to be really no peace agreement. We will say that we will divide up Ukraine as we want to. In other words, Putin saying that to Trump. And Trump, just as David says, spouts it out. And it's either that or he is horribly addicted to dictators. He loves Kim. He said he fell in love with him. And Putin is a strong man and can do whatever he wants. And he had the temerity to call Zelensky a dictator. But the biggest dictator in the world, or rather the littlest, is Putin himself, because he eliminates any kind of viable opposition. He either incarcerates them or disposes of them. What is your view on this that we've just been talking about, Viv?
I'm reminded by this saying, apparently the most important fact of the 20th century was that Americans spoke English. And that basically determined how the 20th century went out, because they spoke English, even though the more German descendants, the English descendants of the US, they supported the UK in World War I and II. You know, World War I is obviously much more of a toss up than World War II, but that is kind of like how, like, the whole of the 20th century went out. I think this is a case that is similar. I think what happened here is that if you recall back in the day where there was that Burisma thing with, you know, Biden's son, and, you know, Trump was basically going after him. And one of the guys that went after Trump as well was a guy called Alexander Vindman. He was one of the guys that basically testified against Trump. He was also a Ukrainian, of Ukrainian descent or something. And I think that kind of like tilted whatever factors he had against Ukraine back in the day. And he's kind of always had a negative impression of the country for what I think is probably some very minor starting point differentials. It could have easily gone the other way. But once it started off and once he's gotten into this whole, you know, I hate you and you are like my enemy and stuff, yeah, he's basically just led into it. Now, as to like people thinking someone has something on him, trust me, if the Russians had something on Trump, the Americans would know about it. The Americans basically were at one point in time when Russia was basically talking about using nuclear weapons, kind of informed Vladimir Putin what he was talking about that day because they had broken into all their systems all his communication systems in Moscow just to show them who's the boss. The Americans have, you know, some of the best, or if not the best, you know, intelligence services in the world. So if they do have something on him, the American CIA would have definitely, you know, brought that out by now. So I don't think it's something like that. I just do think it's a case where something happened initially that basically turned him against Ukraine. Something as simple as basically supporting Biden on the Burisma thing, or could it be that Alexander Dutman guy as well. Mm. And that's basically, he's a petty guy. That's just the way he is. Mm. You on his side, he's going to support you till the end of the earth. You go against him and he's going to turn against you like very quickly.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. This is an irritant,
eh? I think the war's an irritant for him. He just wants it over with. And so he can get on doing all the other kind of things. And he says, well, you know, it's easier to talk to Putin to end this on whatever terms. It doesn't matter. And, you know, we'll have peace. I don't care who suffers. I don't care what it means. I want to get on with his local agenda. He's that kind of person. That he can throw Americans under the car, you know, just under the bus like this. It's just crazy. I mean, anyway, but, and Europe, I don't know how Europe's going to respond to all of this. I mean, they're absolutely shattered and shaken by this. And where this goes, I have no idea.
No, nobody does know. Do you think there's going to be a backlash? It's almost exactly a month. In fact, it is a month into the second term for President Trump, the 47th president. Do you think it's going to be a backlash? Because, I mean, it's a silly thing to say, or it's a silly example, but Oprah Winfrey, who's an influential person, her influence is diminishing somewhat, but she has decided, and she was very strident about it on social media today, she has decided to leave the United States of America and move to Italy for 4 years because she said she cannot breathe the same air as Elon Musk.
You know what? I can understand that because I think there are many people doing that. Not droves, you know what I mean? But there are many people who feel that way and are relocating, you know, somewhere, even to Canada, whatever it is.
Robert De Niro's gone to Canada, yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of impact he is having, you know, on people there. They just cannot believe that they're living in the United States, and this is the United States. And I don't think we had any idea he would do, you know, what he's doing now. I think there was a very positive response from the business world. I think there was also a view, okay, you know, we'll tolerate it. He will change the conversation on a lot of issues. But the way he's going about it and this current issue, you know, by supporting Putin, I think has scared a lot of people.
Yeah, Sheryl Crow, the I think she's Canadian, isn't she, the singer? She's sold her Tesla.
Yeah, Sheryl Crow. Yeah,
Sheryl sold her Tesla and gave the money to an immigrant charity, I think it was, and all sorts of things going on. And there was a very good picture of a Tesla office in Germany, and someone on the first floor had put in this banner saying, "We hate him too." So there's all sorts of things going on. Viv, this is quite petty, but do you think it will escalate? Do you think it'll snowball?
Look, I mean, the Americans are more insulated than any other developed country. And so unless they have American soldiers on the ground, unfortunately, this is going to be meaningless to them. It doesn't have the same kind of like, you know, appeal of the Iraq War or something followed 9/11. So I don't think this is the issue. The issue might come about with the federal towards employees that he's going after. And it's been about 70,000 people he's convinced to basically take that package. And a further, about 200,000 people plus that are going to be fired because they were on probation. Okay. And that is just the start. So he's going to go after just to get into the weeds here, the biggest thing that's going to come around here, he's going to have to go after what's called Medicaid. Okay. There's Medicare, there's Medicaid in the US. And like, those are the biggest, I mean, somebody once said, I think it was Ezra Klein from the New York Times. He says the American government is basically an insurance company with an army. Okay. If you look at all the money it spends, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the army are basically the majority. There's almost nothing left afterwards. Everything else, like, you know, for instance, USAID is nothing. It's like 1% of the budget, if that. So he's going to go after Medicaid. And I think that, that is going to be the real, thing that might affect backlash. But the thing is that it's also a hugely wasteful kind of you know, enterprise. We're talking close on $1 trillion. I think it's $800 billion a year it's spending on Medicaid. But the thing is that what might work in his favor, and again, I don't want to be sounding like I'm prejudiced against Americans, right? But the impression I get of Americans is that they don't like to pay for other people's stuff. Social Security, you put money in, you get money out. Almost everyone benefits from that. Medicare, basically, it's an insurance thing, like for the government, right? So it's almost like an insurance thing. Medicaid is a case where you actually have real distribution from wealthier people towards poorer people. It's mostly about supporting, you know, poorer people in the country through the tax revenue for the rich. And I don't know what the kind of dimensions of his particular support is at the moment, because, you know, he has more of a blue collar kind of support that he used to have. But I think that is something that they are probably going to attack, because that's the one thing that they can usually use to go after, like I said, the $1 trillion budget, deficit plus.
Okay. Well, it's just 1 month and there's so much material for us to mull over. David, we have to come back closer to home, because I had three interviews lined up on Wednesday, and they were to do with something called the South African budget. And then suddenly, there we go, it was cancelled. And David, I don't know, I've read a lot of claptrap, a lot of very detailed articles about why it happened and like this. It's very simple to me, but I will hand over to you now to see if you can simplify it for everybody. What on earth happened, and what is the reputational damage that South Africa has suffered?
Massive reputational damage. I think the ANC has suffered enormous damage. This was brought up 2 weeks ago with the government of national unity, that there was going to be a 2% increase in VAT. That's the easiest thing to do. You know, it's the easiest tax. But the problem is
it's the cruelest as well, by the way.
It is very, and it's far reaching. They would have increased the number of zero rated goods, but at the end of the day, the money that they would have raised would have gone to on social grants and, you know, furthering the government's policies. There was a massive response reaction from the other parties in the government of national unity. And then 2 weeks later, having opposed it, you know, sitting down and seeing the budget, they found that the 2% was in, and obviously there was massive opposition. And this would have led to a huge, this could have led, I don't know whether they would have, when they voted on the budget, the ANC could have found that there was a vote of no confidence against them. I don't know how this would have played out, but they decided to postpone it. Now they've got to go back to the drawing board and find ways of cutting back on on expenditure. The revenue is not there. The only way that they can actually do anything and get further amounts of money that they need is to cut back on expenditure. But a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of criticism, and certainly the ANC are coming with an omelet on their face, not one egg, I don't know how many eggs.
Yes.
It's an awful situation, and I'm surprised that there hasn't been, more of a backlash against this. And I think it's a massive lesson. It's a huge lesson for them. It's a massive wake up call. And, for me, I'm just hoping that it just kind of sparks them into doing something and saying, hold on, you know, we can't carry on as we have.
Well, the simplistic way I look at it, Viv, is that they didn't communicate with each other, so the N and the U of the GNU goes out the window. It's not national unity at all. It's just government again, and it's just ANC. And it's really, really careless. They should have got round the table and said, you didn't like it a few weeks ago. We're still putting it in. It'll be debated in Parliament, and maybe we'll be shot down, but we're going to propose it. But it's such a cruel, as I said earlier on, a cruel tax, because if you earn $5,000 a month, you're a low-income family, for example, the amount of goods percentage-wise that you buy with that 5,000 is VATable. And if you're earning 50,000 a month, then it has really has an impact, of course, but relatively low impact compared to the low-income earner, Viv. Am I being too simplistic here?
I don't think it's 500. I think it's like 500,000, 5 million rands a month. That's when you really start to see, like, you know, not having to spend. A guy that makes 5,000 is spending all his money. And, you know, obviously there are exemptions, but everything becomes income converted to consumption. Therefore, all becomes VATable. Whereas a guy making 500,000 basically doesn't spend all his money and therefore, you know, gets rounded. But here's the problem with this whole issue. Okay, firstly, 17% is slightly above the average for countries like South Africa, but the average is 50 to 60%. So it's not exactly like a gigantic number. It's certainly not like Europe, where places go up to 25% in like the Scandinavian places. I do also think that the government right now, our debt to GDP ratio is about 76. And usually people say 75 for a country like South Africa becomes an issue. Because we are such a high-risk country, we're already spending, you know, more on interest payments, basically fixing our debt, than we are on, like, substantial, you know, towards government departments. So this is something that has to be solved at some point in time. The DA's idea that we have to cut spending is probably the right idea, but in South Africa, what are you going to cut? Are you going to cut government workers? That's not physically feasible for the government. Are you going to cut the 20-plus million people's who are on welfare? That is, I mean, the first thing you have to learn about democracy is you learn to count, okay? There's about millions or so people that pay debt into the income tax system. There's about 20-plus million people that collect government grant, which matters more in a democracy, you know what I mean? So there's noise there. But the one thing I think is actually positive about this, and I think that's why we haven't seen the rand blow out, we haven't seen the market react negatively, is that it shows that the DA still has some power. We were thinking over the last couple of months with the Bella Bill, with the NHI and so on, the DA was rolling over very quickly for all these things. And, you know, it was looking like the DA was not going to be able to stand up for much. The fact that they've stood up right now and caused this kind of ruckus means that they still have a sizable say in the government, which I think is why we are seeing the rand stronger right now than it was, you know, after the announcement yesterday.
Okay. Viv has found a silver lining in what happened yesterday. So well done to you, Viv. David, Viv, I spoke to David yesterday and he was, I phoned him on not a personal matter, but a matter of opinion. And he said he'd been reading through all these results because one of his numerous media commitments was coming up. And David, so I'm going to go over to you now on South African results. I mean, we had Discovery the other day with the trading update, which was stunning, and the share price rallied 10%. Gold shares today doing incredibly well. We had Sibanye out with their numbers. Goldfields out today. DRD Gold is up 10%. Could you sort of cherry pick your results from this week from the JSE Securities Exchange?
I have to say that the one result that surprised us, and I think has been Discovery's numbers. First of all, when they call normalized earnings and or normalized EBITDA, it means that the you know, the actuaries have been kind of looking at certain formula, yes, which is always confusing. So I've got to see the main results. I love to look at cash flow, but it is a good result. I'm not quite sure where they're making it because we're in an environment which is under pressure, which you've seen from all the other results that have come through. You know, most of the numbers that we're seeing now are under huge pressure. This economy, particularly the mining companies, apart from gold, you know, gold is the one area where they did get full benefit from the increase in gold price. So that has lifted earnings. But if you look at the platinum, the iron ore, coal companies, et cetera, our results have been really poor, I mean significantly lower. And then, you know, even if you look at Adcock's numbers today, Anglo's you can't read because it's they're restructuring. And, you know, there have been a lot of impairments. And out of this is going to come a new, much smaller Anglo. So it's very difficult to go through all the numbers and make sense of them. Blue Label came out. Also a disappointing number, flat. Not really making any kind of penetration into the market. I don't know what else there was. AECI, Hulamin, Tiger Brands are trading update. Mondi came out. Also a pretty rough result. But I think that most of it has already been in the market through trading statements or through interim results. But my summary, a quick summary is things are rough here, Lindsay. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's coming through in the numbers. I know that a lot of it might be in the market, but I would expect when we start to see the retail results and bank results, they'll be okay, but I don't think they're going to be spectacular. I think they're going to perhaps underwhelm.
All right. We're in full results season, Discovery being the icing on the cake of rather a tasteless cake, from what you're saying. Viv, this is AI Corner now, because there's been three announcements that even I've noticed, Viv. Microsoft coming up with some wonder chip for quantum computing, number one. Then Elon Musk revealing some kind of a new AI initiative that he thinks is going to be better than anything else. And there was also another one. It's a spin-off. Some chap from the chat GPT stable coming out with his or her or both. Work at ChatGPT has come up with his own company. Do you know the three I'm talking about?
Yes. The first one is, I think, the chip that Microsoft actually did two things in one day. They came out with this game, AI gaming thing, which is remarkable. It's amazing how this stuff works. Like I said, intuitively, I've never had an understanding how this thing works. You just do these sort of things, and they somehow work in this incredible way. It came out with this program, and they came out with this chip that's important because it's a way to basically do quantum computing. And in quantum computing, there's a thing called a qubit. Okay, and the qubit basically allows you some incredibly complicated things, and it's exponentially more difficult. You double it, it's much, much more difficult than just saying two times, you know what I mean? It's more difficult. It's much more than two times more difficult to double the number of qubits. And normally, like, we're talking about 100, maybe a couple hundred qubits in these chips. Now they have a technology that can get to them maybe to 1 million qubits. So you can see that's a step change that's gigantic. Now, this thing won't go on your phone. This thing has to operate at, like, at superconductivity levels and so on, which is incredibly, because complicated. We'll have the chip attached to a machine that's the size of a refrigerator to make it run. But they, according to Satya Nadella, they are looking at as soon as 2027, 2028. That's 3 years from now. Now, the great thing about quantum computers is that they allow you to do calculations that would normally take you the lifetime of the universe to do on a normal computer. Things like, for instance, cracking all bank codes, cracking all encryption. So if they actually have this thing working, you don't want to be buying Bitcoin unless Bitcoin changes its technology, because it'll be able to crack any Bitcoin encryption that's out there in seconds. And same thing, you need to have some kind of change in how crypto works for this thing to operate. The second thing is the Grok thing, for instance. The Grok basically is the next
this
level.
This is the Musk initiative,
right. So he came out with this new thing. Is it as the best in the world? It's the best likely of the released ones. So the released ones don't include O3 from GPT or from OpenAI, which some people say is better than this thing, but it's not released yet, so you can't compare. But of the released ones out in the world, this is the state of the art. Now, it's amazing that he got from zero to state of the art in about a year. He's very good at executing these kind of things. He's built the largest single data center in the world for to work this thing. He's basically doubled the size of that thing for the next training level to go through. That is very impressive. There has been some questions about, whether or not it's overall the best across everything. There's some examples with a bouncing ball in a circle that other programs do better. But I think overall, I've used it. I think it is definitely state of the art, at the very least. It's as good as anything else, and maybe better. Who knows? And then with the figure thing, the figure robot is an interesting thing, because what happened was they basically were working with OpenAI, like you said. And then they came out and said they're going to break up their relationship with OpenAI because they've developed a breakthrough, which they're supposed to release in the next day or two, as I speak to you right now, in robotics. And they said they did this all without OpenAI's help. And so they don't want to basically share it with OpenAI because they don't think it's something that OpenAI helped them with. And therefore, they want to go on it alone. I don't know what it is. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I did not expect the quantum chip to come out, so I don't know what these guys are going to be putting out there. But if it is basically as impressive as they believe it to be, I do think it's going to be something which they're looking to raise money right now at valuation of, I think, about $35 billion or so. $40 billion. If you are an accredited investor and you could invest in them like this year, this would be something that you would definitely want to be looking at. Because as impressive as OpenAI is, as impressive as all the other guys are, and OpenAI, I think, is being valued right now by SoftBank at $350 billion. Okay? Trust me. The nicest chatbot in the world does not compare to a robot that can cook you a dinner and then clean your house afterwards. that's what we're talking about.
I'd rather do it myself. Thank you, Viv.
People talk about all the stuff they want robots to do. Me, if you give me a robot that could give me a grilled cheese sandwich or combine whatever I want, I'm buying it. You know what I mean?
And folder washing.
So you'd rather have some freaky intrusive robot in your house, Viv, making you a cheese sandwich, than actually doing it yourself. You don't get the satisfaction out of getting the bread and making it and layering it up and everything like that. You just want it done for you. You're instant gratification personified, Viv.
But not just like a cheese sandwich. I mean, basically, think of it this way. You have a robot that can do a cheese sandwich. You literally have a 3-star Michelin chef in your house. You want to basically, you can go on any recipe site and have this thing basically cook you the fanciest meal you want. You want some, you know, it's called some fancy, like, you know, sushi or something. This thing can do it for you. This is the start, because if you can do that kind of stuff, it can build houses, it can farm in the fields, it can basically operate in factories. As vast as wonderful as GPT-5 or 4 or whatever it's going to be like, or GPT-5 is going to be like, or GPT-4 is, the impact of the world, the 10% growth rates have to come from these physical robots. It will never come from some chatbot.
Okay, just reminding me of the cheese sandwich reference. A bloke goes into a restaurant, and it's a French restaurant, and the waiter comes along and says, "Yes, monsieur, how can I help you?" He says, "Do you have frog's legs?" He says, "Yes, monsieur, I do." He says, "Well, hop over the bar and make me a cheese sandwich." That's... the dollar rand is, as Viv said, it didn't blow out at all. It went to 1856, 57 briefly, about 10 basis points weaker, but now back at 1839. A British pound against the rand is 23.23. And the euro rand is 19.24, with the euro dollar 104.60 and the British pound 126.30, the pound under a bit of pressure of late. The gold price, not bad at all, $2,938, up $11 an ounce, or 0.4%. The platinum price, also doing quite well. It's still in three figures, though. It's $9.95, which is $13 up on the day. Palladium has traded places with platinum on the big figure front, because it's gone to four figures, $1,007, which is up about 1.6%, or $16 per ounce. As for other commodities, the oil price is really stubborn. I was really bearish of oil this time last year, but now I'm being proved wrong, as usual. $76.16 for Brent crude oil, which is up 0.5%, and West Texas crude, $72.27, which is up 0.6%. The other commodities I'm looking at, no, nothing of any real interest there. The S&P 500 futures, 6,137 for the March futures, which is, 6,123, it's just updated, down 0.2%. US 10-year Treasury bond yield is 4.51%, and the South African 10-year, after the debacle yesterday, 10.89%. Bitcoin, which we've mentioned today, just below 97, just above 97,000 now, up 0.4%. David, movers on the JSE today, please.
Well, the movers were all the gold shares and most of the mining financials, Anglo Gold, Harmony, Pan African, Goldfields. Those were the top four gainers. Amongst the more the heavier shares, Kumba did well. Anglo Gold did well. I mean, Anglo's themselves, surprisingly, after their write-offs. But I think once again, I think this is all known in the market. I think any news that comes out on Anglo, but your platinum shares did pretty well. So once again, it was big moves on the mining counters that actually lifted the JSE All Share Index. Apart from that, in the shares that I watched, there were more losers than gainers. But it was the miners that kept things going. And, of course, you still got the nice first process issue with Tencent going up. That has been giving a bit of a lift to both nice person process. And I see Richemont also had a very good day today. So I think those are the stocks behind the all shares gain today on the market. On the downside, Vodacom, Advertech, Bytes, Pick and Pay, some of the retailers going under pressure here as well. But I think from a
Vodacom down 3.8%, for example. After a couple of good days, actually. Okay, I'm going to go to Viv now, just because something occurred to me, Viv. If I'm a Luddite and know about three things that's happening in AI, Viv. You must know a lot more that's going on because you read magazines and you've got special websites that you go to see and you run an AI fund, which you proudly said was up 9% on the year so far. Is it a fertile universe? In other words, are there new opportunities coming all the time? In other words, you see a company suddenly starting up and you say, right, this is one to look at. Is it that dynamic at the moment?
Oh, yes, it most certainly is. I mean, if you look at DeepSeek, basically, was one of the reasons we are seeing, for instance, like Tencent go up as much as it is. It's because it was a hedge fund. It was a hedge fund run by some guy who basically bought these chips to do high frequency trading and decided to train up a large language model based on that, on the fact that he had all these chips. And that kind of, kickstarted a massive rebound in the Chinese tech sector. He got to meet the second in command in China very quickly. And I think he's also, meeting with the Xi Jinping as well. So this is the kind of quickness that can happen here. And we also have seen, for instance, just what's happened with the Microsoft chip. We are talking about, it's weird. We've gone for maybe 50 years where there's been very little change in the world other than things like the internet. But there hasn't been a real change in the fundamental way the world functions. And I suspect in the next 5 years to 10 years, you'll see more changes happening to how you personally live your life than you saw from 1975 till basically 2020. And that is an amazing time to be alive in. And I do think that the opportunities here are vast. Right now, however, because it's scaling, the reason Elon Musk was able to do what he did to get from zero to basically state of the art, you can't go and do that in any other field except AI, is because all you need to do in AI right now is spend a ton of money and you get really far in advance. And that's why these guys are dominating. But the DeepSeek guys show that if you're just very clever, you can spend still a lot of money, but not, tens of billions of dollars. And you could get, something really impressive as well. So it really is exciting.
Very good. You sound very enthused, I must say, which is encouraging. And David as well, of course, in his own way, is you're the same, aren't you, David?
I am. You know what? I thought that by the end of last year, we would slow down. And things would just take a bit of a breather. But I think the warning, if I'm not using it as a warning. In fact, it's a strong signal that, that Viv is giving. This is not slowing down. More and more money is going to go into it. And it's developing at a pace that we can't keep, in touch with. It's beyond us. So don't write this off. Don't think this is going to go away. If anything, it's going to get stronger. And I think this, for me, still remains a major area of the market to be exposed to. In any portfolio, I wouldn't have less than 50% outside of tech. And I'm talking tech, and I'm being safe. Personally, I can do what I like with my money. It would be higher. But I think where you have to have some kind of balance in a portfolio, I'm still happy to go over 50% with tech stocks.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. As always, given me lots to think about. I shall go back to being depressed for at least another 36 hours until the football on Saturday. But thank you. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg, and David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.